On August 12th, A Hard Day's Night opens in 500 cinemas across the U.S. 15,000 copies of the film were made, more than any other in the history of the cinema. 7 days later, the Beatles began the largest and most exhaustive tour of their careers.
First of all, we go to the West Coast, which is San Francisco, you know, all around there. And apparently, when we get to San Francisco, it's been arranged that we'll have a ticker tape welcome, you know, about those. I mean, that's great. I can't imagine that. But it sounds very good. And we do concerts in very big places like Hollywood Bowl and the Cow Palace, where all this election stuff for the President of America has been recently. And that place, actually, one thing about that place is it holds 18,000 people. And somebody told us from America that the tickets, the 18,000 tickets, were sold out in 3 hours, which, you know, I really can't believe. It's, it still amazes me. It's ridiculous. We go all over America. We go to 25 big cities playing similar type dates to that. And we finish up actually in New York, I think, doing a big charity concert there in New York.
On August 23rd, they perform in concert at the Hollywood Bowl. This concert would later be released by Capitol in North America. After the show, John gives his reaction.
The Bowl was marvelous. Well, it was so good. It was almost too well behaved, you know. They were very good, weren't they? I've never seen a crowd so big, so well behaved. Really, you know, somebody did a great job.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, well. We'd like to sing. Well, well. We'd like to sing a song now. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Yes! Good. I can't find me love.
Although they had 7 days rest during the tour, road manager Mal Evans was quoted as saying that each of them had lost about 20 pounds in sweat. During the tour, the Beatles made what was probably their first political stand. They refused to play a concert in Jacksonville, Florida, if the audience was racially segregated. Paul said they all felt strongly about civil rights and the segregation issue. All of the concerts were strictly controlled by Brian Epstein. While they could easily have charged much more for the tickets, Epstein said they wouldn't allow it because it wasn't fair to the fans. Promoters had to agree to the price set out by the Beatles, and actually, they were happy just to have them appear. The Beatles brought a touch of England with them on the tour. Photographer on the tour, John Rowlands, gives us a description of their dressing rooms.
The dressing room was decked out to make them feel like they're reading in a ballroom at a hotel. A lot of drapes and a carpet on the floor, first time I'd seen it at the Gardens. And they ate English food, especially prepared for them, in attempts to try and cut out the hotel crap, I guess, but rice pudding for dessert, that type of thing, you know. Backstage, there were police everywhere, because although they weren't seen out front, they did not know what to gauge this type of crowd. It was brand new for these hockey halls to suddenly have 18,000 screaming kids at them. And police ringed the stage and backstage to reinforce those guys in case anything happened. There were another three times the amount of police just standing by.
The tour ended on September 20th with a charity concert in New York. John is asked by a reporter to say goodbye to America.
Good night and thanks for the bread.
They had traveled over 22,000 miles and spent 60 hours in the air. For the Beatles, the excitement and hysteria turned to an endless sea of screaming faces.
What did it do to you? You seem to be in a...
They were just like four boys. They really liked it. They were good. They're a real great guy.
guys. It didn't really hit me. And then he started there singing, and I don't know what they do. They just change you. They're not what they used to be. They're just so much better. They just have a stage. They just like a myth for you. It's what they seem like. Every little movement's for you and no one else. It seems so personal, but yeah, it's just for everybody.
Did you ever expect the concert to do this to you?
Oh, no. I came here to sing. I'm not going to scream. I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to do anything. So here I am crying. And the thing is, I touched Paul the other day. I thought, well, that's not going to be nothing. I touched Paul McCartney. And now I've touched him. I can't touch him again, ever again. Never. I got his autograph.
Do you have anything else you want to add?
I just think they're the most wonderful person I've ever met in my whole life. I just love them.
In 10 minutes, if this goes on, the whole stadium will be carried out.
You know, I don't think that some of these teenage girls are emotionally equipped to handle this. You know, they've idolized these fellas for so long. Now, gee, here they are, really in the flesh, and they just can't cope with it. Listen to this.
It's mass hypnosis, Jack. As soon as they do something, the Beatles, anything, you notice how the reaction is?
They're running, going to the cars, running behind the stage, and I believe, from what we can see, they're behind the stage right now.
No, they're getting into the
cars. Are they getting into the cars?
Motorcycle
escort already? Boy, that's what I call quick.
FM.
To the FM, okay.
I would like to say right now that you've been a swell crowd here tonight, so let's keep up the good work. And it gives me a great deal of pleasure on behalf of the PNE and C Fund to present The Beatles!
Just what are the Beatles going to get out of this tonight in the way of money?
Well, they're going to get 60% of everything that comes in here, Jack.
I would think it's going to be an extremely good crowd. I know my wife gave my daughter a tranquilizer before bringing her.
Why didn't you bring me one?
You're skinny little guys. You can't weigh 130 pounds.
A piece? Is that
a fact? No, corporate. Wait, no, they are small little guys. And they look friendly, quite shy little fellas, actually.
Yeah. Is that real hair?
It is. Yeah, one of them needed a shave, yes. I didn't know which one that was. I don't know one. All I know is Ringo. He's the ugly one. They aren't very big, you know. For all that money and all that fame, that they aren't. The four of them are about the same size and... Well, they wouldn't play basketball, that's all I can say.
No.
Have you been doing some errands tonight for the Beatles?
Yes.
What'd you do?
I ran and got salt and salted Ringo's hamburger.
No kidding, eh?
And not only that, I believe 19-cent hamburgers, they got them from King's. Now, with the money they make, I think at least they would have a steak.
Were they all having hamburgers, Fulton?
Yes, they all have hamburgers and milkshakes.
And tell me, do they eat with both hands or just one hand?
Both hands.
Both hands.
The freedom to say with their feet.
They give the teenagers something in the way of nonconformity, and I think every teenager, well, that's what they look for. Especially in this day and age, they stress nonconformity, and that's what the Beatles are.
We put the name The Beatles right across the sock because we think that the girls in America are going to want to be associated with the Beatles, and that is certainly evidenced by what you've seen around here in the last day. Matter of fact, we might have jumped the gun a little bit. We've already sold some of these.
They were pushed and shoved from hotel room to concert hall to airport and airplane and through the unbelievable repetition of questions from the press.
Who came out with the name Beatles and what does it really mean?
John thought of the name Beatles and he'll tell you about it now. it means Beatles, doesn't it? You know, that's just a name. You know, like shoe.
The shoes. You see, we could have been called the shoes for all you know.
Is it true that Pete Best was going to see you at one time?
No.
It is not.
What you seem to have more over here than we have here in England.
Concerning Jane, are you engaged to her in any way?
Nothing. No.
Right.
There's so many rumors that have reached America, you know, about us, which are just completely untrue. That's another of them.
Concerning you and your wife, I asked you this once before when you were here last time. Is your wife expecting a child now?
No, she isn't. They keep writing about it in these damn fool magazines. Damn fool, I say, and I repeat it.
Yes,
damn fool magazines, they keep writing stories about how she broke it to me and all that. I'm not having a baby, she's not having a baby.
There's a rumor that you are leaving the Beatles, is that true?
That's another silly, you know. I don't know where this starts.
Do you consider yourself a little twisted?
No, not really.
When did the jelly beans business start?
Been asked this millions of times, of course, because everybody wants to know. About 6 months after we started, it just got ridiculous in the end, you know. Got millions every day.
What was the most unusual gift you've ever received?
I once received a bra.
You did?
Yeah, with I Love John embroidered on it. I didn't keep it, mind. It didn't fit.
We were never too keen on American people until we got here. Because from things you've seen in films and things that's heard on radio, and so I wasn't very impressed with American people until we got over here.
Still, the hysteria continues as Brian Epstein is offered $10 million for his interest in the Beatles. When they return from America, the Beatles begin work on Beatles for Sale and their next single. On October 1st, VJ Records releases The Beatles vs. the Four Seasons. Frankie Valli comments.
The record company just did it on their very own. The Beatles, we were fans of the Beatles, and they were also fans of ours. I had spent some time with them when they were appearing in Rome, and I was on vacation. And they'd come to see us when we were doing a tour in England, I think in 1963 or 62, the first tour we ever did. And those are some really great people.
On October 9th, 1964, the Beatles began another British tour. Needless to say, the Beatles topped the bill. On November 27th, the Beatles released their eighth single on Parlophone. Although it's a John Lennon song, the importance of George Harrison on the piece can hardly be overstated. It was written at a recording session, and the whole piece is tied together around the opening feedback and subsequent guitar line played by John. There are stories about the feedback being an accident, which weren't true. George's playing throughout the piece was top-notch and years ahead of anyone else. John contributes some great singing and plays the other guitar in the lead duet.